are a couple of things. I mean, for one thing that's happening is that South Korea did not say today that North Korea was imminently going to launch a missile. It did not say that. What is happening is that it's sort of thinking, you know, in those directions. It also does have the anniversary of the founder of its nation, Kim Il-sung's birthday, coming up on the 15th, and it likes to do missile launches and things around that date.
Yeah, like fireworks.
What North Korea did say today was that it was withdrawing all of its 53,000 workers from an industrial park that it jointly runs with South Korea.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Let's let the one bit of income that comes into your workers and helps your economy, cut that off at the knees.
And it's the last remaining symbol of inter-Korean reconciliation.
That seems like a brilliant idea. And you know, one of the lines of thought on this is, you know, the reason that Kim Jong Un is doing all this is he wants, you know, to get back to getting some concessions and getting some things back. This doesn't seem to be the right way of going about that, in my view. But I guess if you look at our history, we have continually, every time Kim Jong Il would, you know, get his dander up, we would always give him something. Maybe it was a basketball from Michael Jordan or some Hollywood movies or whatever. This guy, we just sent Dennis Rodman.
Right. Well, we didn't send him. He went of his own accord. And of course, he might go again. And what was interesting about that, when I saw that interview on George Stephanopoulos on ABC, I spoke to somebody who was very close to that interview, who connected with ABC, who said to me after the interview, you know, what was interesting about Dennis Rodman in that interview was that he repeatedly referred to Kim Jong-un as a boy. And he didn't say it in the jocular way. He referred to him as a boy rather than a man. And, you know, Rodman's 50-ish, and Kim Jong-un is 28, 29. And he said to me, you know, if Rodman kept saying that, it indicated to me that Rodman thought that he was immature. That Rodman, who had met him, spent considerable time with him, didn't think of Kim Jong-un as grown up. And I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, but do you really want that out? That, you know, I don't know. That's to me, the last person I want doing any foreign diplomacy is Dennis Rodman.
It's a little unusual, shall we say?
Yeah. So where are we going with this? Will there be a missile launch? I think there will be a missile launch.
I think there's going to be a missile launch. Yes.
And the response will it be the same?
I think there'll probably be further sanctions if there's anything left to sanction.
Yeah, and the Chinese, you know, I also saw over the weekend it was Putin who said that, you know, if things get out of hand over there, it'll make Chernobyl look like a child's fairy tale.
Yeah.
Meaning that we might nuke them?
I don't think that we would do that unless they offered a really direct threat. I think it's so unlikely that we would want to nuke them. We don't want to do something that's going to force China's hand.
Yeah. So can't China keep their little brother under control? Because that's
awesome. We reached out to China last week, and we asked them politely, could you please speak to North Korea and tell them to cut it out? China's premier spoke publicly yesterday and said openly, and this is really unusual, actually said no one should be allowed to throw a region and even the whole world into chaos for selfish gains. That's really blunt for China.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, they're kind of screwing up commerce, and you know, the Chinese can't make big money if someone's screwing up.
Exactly.
Yeah, and speaking of one of our last wars, I see another bomb went off in Afghanistan.
Yeah, another bomb went off in Afghanistan today. A number of people dead and injured. I don't know what the latest numbers are on that. It's been growing through the morning. Certainly a question was asked today about the most recent violence there. And Jay Carney, the White House spokesman, said that Afghanistan remains a violent place. He also said that this most recent violence will not impact our long-term policy goals in Afghanistan. And he also wouldn't be drawn on any numbers in terms of how many troops were going to be leaving there after 2013. So he basically gave us almost nothing.
So this is another bomb in addition to what? Saturday, I think there was a bomb that killed six Americans as well.
There was the one that killed six Americans, and there was that was a car bomb. And then there was a separate strike by NATO that killed 18 people, I believe it was, including 11 children, and these were Afghans.
Jeez. Just nuts. And finally, let's come home to, I guess, another spill. Do we have more oil to be cleaned up in the Gulf of Mexico?
Yeah, we've had two spills in the last week or so. We've had one in Arkansas that was in a residential neighborhood, except we don't know any details because Exxon won't let the press in, and the local sheriff's department is threatening to arrest the press if they try to get anywhere close to the oil spill at all.
Yeah, so much of a Constitution thing.
Forget about that. The local press has just been told, we're going to arrest you if you come any closer or if you don't leave right now. The NPR news director has reported it. I mean, it's fascinating. This most recent one is Shell, and it's near Houston, and they're reporting 50 barrels. But, of course, I would be interested to know whether it is 50 barrels, because unless a reporter has been on the site and seen how many barrels it is, and I don't know how many barrels there is in Arkansas because nobody can see.
50 barrels? Just 50 barrels?
That's what we're being told.
Uh-huh. Again, that's what they're going to violate the Constitution over?
Yeah.
Nice. Well, hey, you know, we do know who runs the country.
Yeah, and they're putting out, the EPA, and Exxon are putting out like the EPA is putting out its morning bulletins, via Exxon.
You know, if that doesn't make you run screaming for the exits, I don't know. Well, and hey, how much of this is going to be, how much are these the same actors who are going to bring that wonderful pipeline right through the middle of our country to take that Canadian oil into the international market?
I don't know the answer to that, but it's worrisome. I asked a question of Jake Carney today at the White House about these spills and said, are these spills impacting and factoring into the president's decision on Keystone? And he said, oh, it's a decision by the State Department and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, great. Just great. Victoria, it's always great talking with you. Appreciate the time.
Thank you.
Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You'll listen to The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Thanks for listening to The Rick Smith Show. We are currently moving to a new, better studio that will allow us to bring new features to the show. We'll be back next week with fresh content talking about the attacks on workers today. In the meantime, enjoy some of our best programming from last year's attacks. To keep updated with what's happening in Harrisburg and around the globe, be sure to like our Facebook page at facebook.com/Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. More than 1,000 Las Vegas taxi drivers are entering their fourth week on strike against the Yellow Checker Star cab company after the company imposed a labor contract rejected by 70% of the drivers. Compensation and hours worked are major issues. Sam Moffitt is a chief union steward with the Taxi Drivers Union, ITPEU, Local 4873. He says compensation is the same now as it was in 2008, 39% of the meter plus tips. Drivers often have to work 12-hour shifts and pay $55 a week, plus about $3.60 a day deducted from their fares for health care. Moffitt says that many of these striking Las Vegas drivers are immigrants chasing the American dream. But while the strike is on, they're urging Vegas tourists to not take Yellow Checker Star cabs.
People that came over here with the great American dream, as what our fathers and our forefathers did the same thing. And all we expect, all the cab drivers want, is a fair contract. We're not asking for the world. We don't expect the world. But we expect to be treated fairly and be treated as humans. And not only Yellow Checker Star, but every cab company in Las Vegas is guilty of the same thing. And this needs to be resolved. It needs to be changed.
The forced federal furloughs brought on by the sequester cuts will significantly impact younger workers and their families. Jesse Russell reports.
Last week, rallies calling on Congress to fix the sequester cuts were held throughout the country. Howard Egerman is a Social Security worker, and he's also American Federation of Government Employees Local 3172 Vice President. He attended a rally in East Oakland, California. He said one of the primary concerns is how unpaid furloughs will impact new hires.
The people who may be first to go are the newest employees, the temporary hires, who are primarily disabled individuals, Peace Corps volunteers, and what concerns me most, veterans, because I started as a veteran 40 years ago.
Egerman. Said the 20% pay cut that will result from the furloughs will overwhelmingly hinder younger workers from being able to pay their bills and get ahead.
I have worries about our younger people not being able to pay their rent, not being able to pay their car note. And, for instance, one of my colleagues has something like $100,000 in college loans. I'm concerned about the young folks. That is my major concern.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
Workers Independent News made possible in part through underwriting support from the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Standing tall against a multinational corporate agenda, The Rick Smith Show.
That's one of the things I would have liked to have seen in the State of the Union address. Look at workers' rights. It'd be nice to talk about the Employee Free Choice Act again. This year, for the last year, 2011, looks like the numbers of union members jumped a little bit. The private sector added 110,000 new members. And I look at this, and you look at the 61,000 and declining in the public sector, a direct result of the Republicans. They're basically turning the guns on government. This cut, gut, and punish, this slash and burn wherever we can, anything they can do to hold up this recovery. But lost 61,000 in the public sector, but added 110,000 members in the private sector. Private sector density remained even this year over the year before. So that's a good thing. But it's all about organizing, and I like the fact that the guy who's the head of the National Labor Relations Board has said we're gonna do what the board is supposed to do, and that's help workers, help them become part of a union, help them with collective bargaining. That's the right direction. And when I see an election win, I want to talk to the folks who are doing it. That's why I've asked Chris Calabrese from CWA Local 1109 in New York, to come talk to us about the organizing drive that he was a part of. Chris, thanks for taking time for me.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good.
Thanks for having me on.
You know, I look at this, and it's not often I see a big company like Cablevision where workers have been successful against the attacks.
No, it isn't. In this day and age, the way things have been in this country, it is very, very difficult to organize. But I think that what we did yesterday and really over the last 6 months and before that proves that if we really, really put our nose to the grindstone and work at it and prepare and be organized ourselves and really be committed to it, that it can be done. And I think that workers in this country are finally seeing that Republicans and corporations, and to me they're one and the same, you know, they don't have their best interest in mind, and that the union is the gateway to the middle class.
Absolutely. And I look at the vote result, 180 to 86. That's extremely impressive.
Yeah, let me tell you something, Rick. I was not expecting that. I am very conservative when we figure out where we think the votes are going to be, and I thought we were going to be in around the 160 range, and to just really have a blowout like that really shows the commitment of the organizing committee and the Cablevision workers, and that they got the word out the way that it should be, and that they were leaders in the workplace. That's the only way that that's possible.
Yeah, you know, I saw a story, and they were talking to one of the technicians who said he was waiting for 13 years for this. Did this campaign take that long?
Well, they've had failed. He works for, I know the person you're speaking about, and he works for Cablevision for 13 years, and there was a failed organizing drive in 2004, and they tried to do it in 2008, and there was something in the late 90s before I was around, and so I don't remember that one. But I guess the 13 years was the failed drives, and finally we got a successful drive.
Now, the company, I guarantee they didn't go quietly. More of the forced meetings, the group meetings, the one-on-one meetings, that kind of stuff. You know, basically management saying, if you vote for this, you'll probably lose your job or who knows what. Did you encounter much of that?
Oh, we encountered tons of that. It was really a blistering assault. We never saw a company that did so many captive audience meetings with their workers. They did it every day for 42 days straight from the time we filed, for 2 to 4 hours a day.
Let me ask you this. You know, one of the things that one of the frames I hear quite often, especially from Gowdy, one of the representatives from South Carolina, who just said, you know, we can't have these quick elections. The NLRB new rules that we actually have elections in a reasonable amount of time is to them unreasonable because it doesn't give them what they say enough time to talk to their employees. And, you know, personally, I think it's ridiculous that they would even begin to say that because, you know, they had from day one to talk to their employees and treat them well. But these captive meetings gives them plenty of time to talk to it.
There's plenty of time to talk to them, and really that's a bunch of nonsense. Even though we filed for the election on December 16th, the truth of the matter is the company knew that the workers were trying to organize from back in September. They were just too cocky to believe that we would ever get the support to file for an election. So if they wanted to start in September, they could have. And the truth of the matter is all corporations in this country, it's not like they're blindsided the day of the petition. They know what's coming. And what they really want to do is they like to ratchet up the pressure that was the last 42 days and put a lot of fear in the workers. And so that's why someone would make a comment like that.
You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Chris Calabrese. He is an organizer with CWA, the Communication Workers of America, Local 1109 in New York. They've got a website for this campaign, the cablevision99.org. We've got a link at the ricksmithshow.com. Just click on Chris's name. You know, in this campaign, and I don't know, I'm hoping you'll be able to tell me, what were the main reasons? Because I find, you know, during the time that I've spent around organizers, it's basically the treatment of workers, not so much wages or benefits, but really the respect, the voice, those kind of things. In this case, what did you find to be the common theme, the main theme among the workers?
I mean, I think you said it right there, Rick, is dignity and respect and coming to work every day. And I'm using someone else's words, but they felt like they were treated like the help. They never had a say in anything. Benefits changed, systems changed, work rules changed. And it was always good for the company and never for the workers. They had no say in that. And any time they tried to do something about something that was unfair, you know, they were pushed back and people were fired. And their wages and benefits are lower than the rest of the industry. And so all that stuff resonated with them.
So you're going to give them an opportunity to raise wages, get a little bit better benefits. You know what unions are about, wages, hours, conditions.
Exactly. But we know it won't be easy. Yesterday was a big victory, but the truth of the matter is we're going to be in another battle to get a contract with them. Cablevision already sent out a public statement last night, and their public statement, I think, is telling of how they're thinking, is they said that they're very disappointed by the vote. They don't think that CWA has anything to offer these workers, and we are analyzing our next move and considering all our options.
No, and we know what that means.
Yeah, that means we're going to try and break this up.
That means a contract negotiation that'll probably take 10 years. Because, you know, and the reason I brought up the Employee Free Choice Act at the beginning is one of the main tenets, and I think the tenet that business and the Chamber of Commerce was most afraid of was that contract portion, to where you've got a year or 90 days or however long the period was to sit down and hammer out an agreement so you don't have these long drawn out court delays. You don't have these days arguing over where a period or an apostrophe should be.
Exactly. Most organizing drives in this country, when you're victorious, it's usually at a small margin. And the next move the companies like to do is to take their time in contract negotiations in the hopes that once a year passes, that they can get a decert election. So the Employee Free Choice Act would have stopped that if we could have ever gotten that law passed. And I think it's a fair law. We don't need... If you buckle down and work, you don't need a year or 2 years to come to a contract agreement. You can do it pretty quickly when two parties want to really bargain in good faith.
Absolutely. And you know, it makes no sense that they can't come together. But, you know, what this does, in my opinion, and I think as a nation we've fostered this idea, and I think it's the business community who's really rammed it down our throats, that somehow workers who are organized, they stand in contrast to what the company's trying to do, that somehow there's this adversarial relationship, where in other countries like Germany, they have union members who are sitting on their boards of trustees. They have union members in on every decision because the workers and management in those countries, they have a common goal of making their company better. But here in this country, I got to believe it comes from the top down, because I don't know any working people who are happy with it. But that seems to be the path that we've taken in this country. Curious your thoughts.
Well, I have two thoughts on that. One, I think that it's a misconception to think that we don't want to work with companies. Every unionized worker, whatever company they work for, they want to have pride in their company, and they want their company to do well. We both need each other. They need the labor, and we need the company. We want the company to do well. We want them to make profits so that we can be paid accordingly and have job security. And then the second thought on the way we think in this country compared to other countries is I think you hit something right on the head. Germany, for instance, is one of those countries where union leaders sit on the boards of the companies. Think about that. Germany, the same country that less than 100 years ago Hitler ruled, has it in their constitution that it's against the constitution to harass or intimidate or retaliate against workers who try to organize. The right to organize is in their constitution in Germany.
Yeah, good luck on getting that something like that done here. And I guess the last question I have for you is, do you have a right? Do you think we legally have a right to join and form unions collectively? And do you think it actually exists?
You know, we have a legal right to join a union, but which it should also say is, if you can run into a burning building to get there, if you can jump over alligators to get there, I mean, it's a legal right in the most minuscule way. It is so hard to do, and everything is against you to do it. And that's why when we have a win like we had yesterday, that's why it's so special, because you know how hard you work and that's the hurdles that you had to do to get there.
Yeah.
So we do have a legal right, but it's always an uphill battle.
Chris, I appreciate the time. I wish you nothing but the best in the path going forward. Congratulations on the win. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Chris Calabrese, organizer with CWA Local 1109. The website, thecablevision99.org. Of course, we've got a link at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on Chris's name. Quick break, right back after this. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Say conservatism. Rick Smith.
Thanks for listening to the Rick Smith Show. We are currently moving to a new, better studio that will allow us to bring new features to the show. We'll be back next week with fresh content talking about the attacks on workers today. In the meantime, enjoy some of our best programming from last year's attacks. To keep updated with what's happening in Harrisburg and around the globe, be sure to like our Facebook page at facebook.com/Rick Smith Show.
When President Obama called for raising America's wage floor to $9 an hour, GOP House Leader John Boehner attacked it like a gator on a poodle. Incredibly, he claimed that raising the wages of our country's most poorly paid workers would hurt, guess who? America's most poorly paid workers. This disingenuous pitting of poor people against themselves is derived from a corporate-manufactured myth that hiking the minimum forces small business owners to fire employees or even go bankrupt. When you raise the price of employment, he grumped, guess what happens? You get less of it. Well, guess again, John. That job killer fable has been debunked again and again by real-world experience. The pay floor has constantly been elevated by Congress, states, and cities, causing little to zero negative impacts on job numbers, but very positive results for employee morale, productivity, and turnover. It also generates a spending boost for local economies, especially for, guess who, small businesses. Obviously, the major impact of the raise is to lift the incomes of about 18 million hardworking people in low-wage jobs, allowing them to make a down payment on a used car or enroll in a couple of community college classes. Plus, it gives at least a token nod to the essential need of bridging America's dangerously widening chasm of economic inequality. This is Jim Hightower saying, the real shame in the Republican leader's attack is not his flagrant dishonesty, but the raw disdain it flings at low-wage workers, 60% of whom are women. The Boehners, Romneys, Koch brothers, and Wall Street billionaires see such people only in terms of their price tags, not in their value. That dehumanized contempt for the working class not only stains those who look down on the non-rich, but it's also holding back public policies to help America reach its full economic potential, and it is social dynamite.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
You know what it means when they pay you minimum wage? You know what they're trying to tell you is like, hey, if I could pay you less, I would.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website at TheRickSmithShow.com. So Ford Motor Company announced record annual profits, $20 billion. That's what they made in 2011. They also announced their net income of $13.6 billion in the fourth quarter. This marks the third consecutive year of profitability for Ford Motor Company after nearly going bankrupt in 2008. And you think about what Obama did with the other auto companies. By saving them, understand what would have happened had we let GM and Chrysler go down. Had they gone, the suppliers that funneled parts and materials to those two companies, they would have gone down too. And that would have taken Ford with them. And I think you have to realize that if they're interlocked at a certain point, because they deal with the same supplies chain, they deal with the same suppliers, and if two of the three were to go down, the third one you know was going to come with it. So a big part of this success at Ford has to be given, you know, to Obama for saying, we're not going to let the U.S. car companies take a dive. Now, you can make the argument, and I have, you know, that the workers, they're the ones who saved the company. Because they're the ones who, again, gave another series of concessions. You know, we keep hearing about all these rich American auto workers. Understand, for the last 20, 25 years, the auto industry, those working people have been giving concession after concession after concession after concession. So when I hear the Romneys of the world saying, well, they're greedy, it makes me want to smack him.
The unions asked for too much, and the management gave too much, And they all said, we're going to pass along the burdens to the future.
Yeah, yeah.
We're just going to keep on adding more and more cost. You see numbers like $70 an hour was being paid for people on the lines. And ultimately, you can't compete globally. You can't compete with foreign manufacturers if your compensation level is completely out of alignment.
Completely out of alignment.
And the area that it became really a problem was work rules.
Work rules.
And then, of course, the legacy costs, the retiree costs became overwhelming. And the companies started borrowing more money to try and pay for all this. And finally, it couldn't go on forever.
No, just couldn't go on forever. Because you know what? When you pay your workers and those old people, how long do you have to keep old people around? Now, I look at the story I talked about not too long ago in Germany. They actually, their pay, $67.14 an hour. $67.14 an hour for a German auto worker. Here in the U.S., $33.77. That's what the German auto companies pay their workers here in the U.S. That's what their benefits and health care and their pensions and everything. So when he says $70 an hour, which it wasn't $70 an hour, and that's just completely outrageous. Germany, $67 an hour. And what I'm amazed at is you've got a guy who's running around saying what we want, what we need, the only way we can compete is if you workers work for less. And no health care, no pensions. Lower wages. That's the only way American companies compete. That's the world he wants to take us to. Instead of bringing everybody out, he wants to tear us completely down. And I love playing this clip because had it been the Republicans' view, had the Republicans had their way, GM, Chrysler, and I guarantee you Ford would have gone down.
Volkswagen just invested in Tennessee, in a right-to-work state, at a low cost, with less health care. Why should we prop others up when other companies can compete in this marketplace? It's time to let these people learn the lesson.
So here's this is the scenario that they've set up. This is the Republican view. Understand this for election time. I'm telling you right now. Because Romney's saying, look, we just can't compete. Those high wages can't compete. Look what the Germans have been able to do. In their country, they pay their auto workers $67 an hour. They outsource jobs to the U.S., and they pay U.S. workers $33 an hour. We're stealing jobs from the Germans. And now you've got an American auto industry who was competitive with the German industry. The workers were treated the same. Yet they were allowed to come in here, and they were courted by Republican governors and Republican congressmen and Republican senators who said, yeah, come to our southern states, come to Alabama, come to Tennessee, because Volkswagen invested in Tennessee, right to work state, less wage, less health care. Oh, and don't forget the $1 billion that the state of Tennessee gave to Volkswagen. Don't forget that. So what was set up by Republicans, understand, they're going to destroy your standard of living. They believe in a two-class system. They believe in us and them. Them having all of the resources, all of the money, all of the advantage, all of the opportunity, and us doing whatever it is they want us to do. So when I look at this and I go, this was a masterfully set up screw job. We were competitive with the Germans. We were building cars at the same cost, same quality, right there. We were all right there. Workers in both countries were doing very well. We had a prosperous economy. Everything was coming around. And then we brought in the Japanese car companies who started undercutting our labor. Because in Japan, they make high wages too there. That's the reason they came here. Exploitable labor. Yeah, great. We can get cheap labor in those non-union states. Oh, yes. And then the Germans said, we can cut our labor costs in half because those Americans are dumb. They're too stupid to realize how our workers have it and how most of their workers used to have it until now. So it's not surprising to me that someone like Nikki Haley would say, we don't need those unions around. We've got you people brainwashed to believe you don't need them. And if we had them around, they might tell you what a good thing it is, and you might actually, get a thought in your head. But think about it, man. I mean, it's amazing the scam that they pulled on us. It's just mind-blowing.
and then we signed NAFTA. So we thought we'll do like Germany does. There's a great idea. We'll do what Germany does. And we'll move those auto plants into Mexico. And we'll take advantage of that cheap labor, thus pulling the wage of everybody down. But it's competition. It's competition, Rick. But yet the price of the car, one made in the U.S. and one made in Mexico, same price. Even though the labor was completely, completely different. And who walked away? Well, the wealth class. The Romneys of the world. The investors. The people who tell you that work is shifting money from one pocket to another. The people that tell you, oh, my aching back, I got to carry these money bags around. That's the world they're leading us to, man. Sad, sad, sad. And I saw this story, Washington Post of all places. It's called The Federal Coach. And the headline by a guy named Tom Fox, dealing with a passive-aggressive leaders. And basically he's talking about a bad boss, a guy who's snarky, a guy who's, you know, going to, oh, yeah, you're going to sign up for that. Oh, that's interesting idea. And the advice that he gives is not the advice that I would have given. But understand, he's saying that in the federal workplace, you can't go confront somebody, because you don't want to burn bridges. And I say the whole reason that you have a union, number one, so you don't have these problems. If someone notices there's a problem with a boss and a lot of number of people have it, there's a process for that. Not only does it help the individual workers, it actually helps the company get rid of a bad boss, someone who's going to bring down morale. But let's not talk about how we can help companies. He says, you know, first thing he says is, you know, if someone tells you something that you don't like, or, you know, don't take it personally. You're too sensitive. I think about my aunt who works in a non-union facility. And they'll never, the office people will never, ever do that. Now, the plant where she works, those folks are unionized, and they'd never put up with it. So the boss of the plant said something to my aunt, and she said, you know, I really don't appreciate that. And he told her to go do that thing that people do with the F word herself. Her boss tells her, oh, you're just too sensitive. That was her recourse. Nothing. So his advice, if you're in a situation like this, and this is beautiful because, you know, this is where they're moving us to. This is where we're training kids to, you know, to not question authority and just do what we're told and not to be too sensitive. He says, of course, it may be too difficult for your manager to change because, after all of that aggression pointed towards you, it's not his fault. It's yours, of course, because he just might not change. So you're going to have to accept it. And he says you might have to find a mentor who can help you navigate the situation more effectively. But it may be just as likely that you need to leave the bad boss. So you got to quit your job. Is that what it is? Mind-blowing. Absolutely mind-blowing. But, you know, this is what we're teaching kids. This is what we're teaching workers, that you don't have a voice in the job. You have to deal with it. Don't be oversensitive. And I say BS to that, man. You got rights, and you should stand up for them. And that's why I'm glad to see those folks at Cablevision said, you know, enough is enough. Because time and time again, you know what I find to be the reason? The number one reason people put their jobs on the line, put their livelihoods on their line, put their families on the line, because they're treated like garbage. And employers know, where are you going to go, especially in this economy? Good for them. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Joshua Holland from Alternet. He's also the host of Alternet Radio Hour with Joshua Holland, airing in D.C. on WEAC Radio. Quick break, back after this. With my microphone, I do a super show. I wear a cowboy hat, it is my business hat. I'm on till 1 a.m., I must tell you that. I'm a man with a mission. The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better. Thanks for listening to The Rick Smith Show. We are currently moving to a new, better studio that will allow us to bring new features to the show. We'll be back next week with fresh content talking about the attacks on workers today. In the meantime, enjoy some of our best programming from last year's attacks. to keep updated with what's happening in Harrisburg and around the globe, be sure to like our Facebook page at facebook.com/Rick Smith Show.
Would you dive 14 feet deep in the Susquehanna to keep a bridge safe? Would you spend night after night with prisoners to keep your community safe? Would you spend Christmas Eve plowing snow to keep roads safe? AFSCME members do. Men and women who choose to serve in public service. Mine inspectors, 911 dispatchers, healthcare workers, parole agents. You may not think about them, but no, they're all thinking about you. This message brought to you by AFSCME Council 13.
AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at thericksmithshow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can, and we will, rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
On the flip-flops as it relates to trust. I don't know that he'd go on to be President Obama, given his record. I mean, when there is a question about whether you're running for the White House or running for the Waffle House, you've got a real problem with the American people.
Darling, you've got to let me know. Should I stay or should I go?
Well, you know, in the case of Huntsman, who that clip was, he went. He got the message and, well, he went. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. So this frame that the Romney campaign keeps throwing out there, that they're the job creators. They know how to create jobs. And the reason we should put Mitzi in the White House is because, well, he knows how to create jobs. And he's done it before because he's a businessman and, you know, blah, 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 blah. Reality, be damned. That's why I've asked Joshua Holland, senior editor and senior writer over at Alternet, also the host of Alternet Radio Hour with Joshua Holland, airing in the Washington, D.C. area over on We Act Radio. Joshua, thanks for taking time for me.
Hey, Rick. Thanks for having me.
You know, I look at this whole job creator thing, BS. I mean, I can't think of any other word but BS.
It's a way to just get us to not talk about the issue. I mean, it's really that simple. And they use it for everything. You know, you can talk about taxing the top earners. You can talk about corporate taxes. Environmentalism destroys jobs. It's just a way to avoid having a substantive discussion about these issues.
You know, and I'm thankful to Newt Gingrich, because you knew this was probably going to be Obama's attack line, because it's true. But I'm glad that Gingrich has been the one to do it, because, you know, I remember going back to the 80s talking about this kind of stuff going on, Romney and, you know, people like him taking up companies, you know, sucking them up, hostile takeovers, stealing their pensions, loading them with debt, and then cutting them off to die, and then, of course, making a whole bunch of money in fees and all kind of stuff. On the backside, them always winning, me always losing. And I'm glad we're seeing this now.
Yes, I am too. And I mean, it's, of course, there's a certain amount of hypocrisy. Newt Gingrich is on the board of one of Bain Capital's biggest competitors, on an advisory board. But look, he's bringing these issues up. We're talking about it, and we got to thank Newt for doing that. You know, it's funny that you talked about how these leveraged buyout firms in the 80s, because that's what Bain is doing, they got such a bad name, and, you know, we remember the junk bond kings and all this stuff going on. they got such a bad name that they reinvented themselves as private equity firms. And, you know, Romney wants to talk about the very few deals that he did that were known as venture capital deals. And that's not what he did for the most part at Bain. So he wants to talk about Staples. Staples is a company that they invested money early on. They stuck with it. They wanted to grow the company. And nobody has any problems with that.
I
and
don't.
That represents most of the so-called jobs that Mitt Romney created. What he did most of the time was these leveraged buyout deals where they take a company, they buy it, but they don't really buy it. They put down a little fraction. And then they finance the rest, but they're not borrowing the money. In other words, Bain doesn't borrow the money. The debt goes on to the company that they acquire.
Yep.
So then they strip it down. They raid the pension fund. They lay off employees. And they run up the debt to the point where it cuts the company's tax burden in half. So it's long-term versus short-term. And then they pocket the difference in all of these fees, and they get out before it crashes. They leave these companies with very, very, very heavy debt loads. But what do they care? Because they've made 2% management fees and 20% of the short-term profits.
Yeah, and, you know, the other part of this that nobody seems to be focusing on is when they go through bankruptcy and they write off all these debts, we end up, as taxpayers, holding part of that burden. And when the pension funds go bust because they basically raided it and borrowed from it, we end up picking that up as well through the PBGC, which is horribly underfunded.
That's right. And, I mean, this is their strategy. This is their business strategy. You know, Bain never acquired a company that they didn't then start a fight with labor over, you know, again, by raiding pension funds for the most part, forcing employees to take salary cuts while they started to pocket these very, very, very rich fees. So this idea that, you know, Mitt Romney wants to talk about Staples is a very specific and intentional way to distract us from a discussion about the leveraged buyout business, which is just as insidious today as it was in the 1980s.
Well, let's talk about Staples for a minute, because I got to be honest with you. I don't know that those are the kind of jobs I want. You know, they're jobs, I get it. Yeah, they pay, you know, what, 10, 12 bucks an hour?
Well, no, they start at $7 and $8 an hour.
I mean, when you're there, I mean, if you're a career-long person, it's what, 10, 12 bucks an hour? Is that enough
they
to raise a family?
They 14 maybe, but yes, they're McJobs. They're, and this is another thing that I think is important to talk about. This is a key point. They always want to talk about raw numbers of jobs as if jobs are generic, as if there aren't good-paying jobs, decent jobs with job security, with benefits, and crappy McJobs that are like working as a fry chef. And, you know, you hit the hammer on the Staples. I mean, most of those jobs are low-wage jobs that are hard to raise a family on.
Well, and not just Staples. I mean, the other two that he throws out as, you know, the big success stories is Sports Authority and Domino's Pizza. Again, you know, those are, when I think of a good, solid, middle-class job that you're going to be able to buy a house and raise a family and put kids through college, none of those are those jobs in my opinion.
I agree. And the sad thing is that we've added during the recovery a lot more jobs in the lower 40% of the wage distribution than we have in the upper. So this is part of the shift from a, you know, balanced economy with manufacturing to a service economy with a very, very wealthy financial services at the top.
Are you surprised at the way Romney's been running this campaign? I mean, he went into South Carolina basically saying, look, the reason our auto industry was in trouble is there were greedy workers and they wanted too much. We should be a country that works for lower wages and no health care and no pensions. That seems to be the positions that he's taking. I mean, he's not saying it directly. Well, maybe he is.
I mean, he is.
The unions asked for too much and the management gave too much. And they all said, we're going to pass along the burdens to the future. We're just going to keep on adding more and more costs. You see numbers like $70 an hour.
$70 an hour for those auto workers. And we're going to, you know, have to pay those legacy costs for those old people.
Meanwhile, Mitt makes $57,000 a day.
Yeah, but don't talk about that. Come on. He's one of us. He's unemployed. He's just like you and me. He walks, in fact, he told us, he walks the same streets.
He's worried about a pink slip. You know, the thing is that I'm not surprised because it's a GOP primary. This is the kind of rhetoric, this red meat rhetoric, that the base has been conditioned to accept. You know, you can look at Fox. It's a 24/7 propaganda channel vilifying, you know, organized labor and liberals and You know, the things that provide some minimal social safety net in this country, as the entitlement culture, et cetera, these are the base voters, and they are conditioned to buy into these things at to their own detriment. I mean, this is the classic kind of liberal criticism that, you know, the use of the conservative rhetoric that we see causes people to not see where their own interests are and actually vote against their own interests. And it'll be interesting to see whether he can actually pivot. I think that we all agree that Romney will be, in all likelihood, the eventual nominee. If he can pivot to a more centrist tack when the when we get to the general election. And, of course, this is all setting up the Obama campaign, because we know the narratives that the Democrats are going to take, and you know, they're putting up all these softballs that they're eventually going to smack.
Well, and they should. I mean, at least you hope, if they run any kind of campaign. And judging from the last time they ran a campaign, I thought it was one of the best I've ever seen. I hope they do, because if this guy takes power and the Republicans control Congress, we are in a world of hurt in this country.
Well, we also have two Supreme Court justices who are 76 and 74. One had cancer. You know, you're right. You're absolutely right. There's a lot at stake in this election. We say that every election, but I think it's definitely true. And if you look at, you know, how slow and sluggish this so-called economic recovery is, it can be killed if we implement a lot of cuts to spending programs, et cetera, et cetera. You know, they can do extraordinary amounts of damage with this vulnerable economy.
You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Joshua Holland, senior writer and editor over at Alternet.org. He's also the host of Alternet Radio Hour with Joshua Holland, airing in the Washington, D.C. area on We Act Radio. We've got links at TheRickSmithShow.com. You know, Josh, one of the things that I've been really kind of amazed at is the fluency, the way it just flows off of Newt's tongue, the food stamp president, and all of these buzzwords that we know basically just, you know, pandering to the angry white guy.
You know, I think that Newt's got two things going on here. He's, of course, speaking in racist, you know, dog whistles to pander to that white guy, but he's also, this is all part of a trap. Newt wanted to be called on that by the media. If you look at his performance in these debates, he has just been smacking around the hosts, the moderators, and getting incredible ovations from the debate audiences every time he does it. So I think that he actually laid that out as a trap, and he was hoping that somebody like Juan Williams would call him on it so that he could then savage Juan Williams. These are his best moments in these debates. It was interesting, in last night's debate, you kept seeing, you know, Newt kind of looking for something to get upset about, and when it never came, it never materialized, he just said, well, screw it, we'll just attack Wolf Blitzer anyway. It didn't work because the audience wasn't really energized by the supposed slight that Wolf Blitzer had committed.
And good for him for standing up for himself. But I thought that crowd was more of a pro-Romney crowd than a pro-Gingrich crowd, which is what I thought the South Carolina crowd was, where he got such a rousing ovation.
Yes. I mean, you know, well, we had seen in the polls in the days leading up to it that there had been a big shift away from Newt towards Romney. I mean, Newt had been leading just maybe four or five days before the debate, but you can see the effect of Romney's extremely well-funded ad campaign.
Yep.
And certainly the GOP establishment has aligned behind Romney.
And the moon talk didn't help.
You know, it's so weird. Remember George Bush going to the Mars?
Yeah. And, you know, I said, you know, Newt actually said he wanted to go to Venus, and I thought he was more interested in probably the front, the women's, well, never mind. We're not going to Uranus. We're not going to Uranus on that one.
Romney wants an off-planet account to shelter his fortune. He wants a moon-based account. The Caymans are not good enough.
Well, we found that. Evidently, we found that money. That's why he wants to take it. That's a good one, though. But, you know, I thought that it kind of made him look a little crazy. And I get the idea of thinking big.
And, I mean, this is Newt is prone to these grandiose things where people say, wait a second, what are you talking about? You know, you've been talking about deficits for years and years and years, and now you want to go to the moon, and you don't want to, you know, when he was bashing NASA, I thought that was really interesting because he referenced JFK, and I mean, NASA was a huge government undertaking that created a rather remarkable victory in the race, in the space race. And here he is kind of, it was all so incoherent. You know, the bashing of government, bashing of NASA, saying that we've let NASA slip so that we can't send people to the moon anymore. And it just, you know, it was incoherent.
Yeah, we should do like we did with the airline industry back in the 30s, which I don't think anybody got.
Right.
And it's just, well, we will see where this takes us in the coming days. Tell me about the radio program, the alternate radio hour with Joshua Holland there at WEAC Radio. When does that begin?
We're starting a week from this Sunday will be our debut. And we really are kind of like barbarians at the gate, because this new radio station, WEAC Radio, it's going to have progressive radio in Washington, D.C., which is, you know, a bastion of conventional thinking with a very narrow discourse. And a lot of bipartisan agreement. We're not going to have any of that on the show. You know, we're not going to have kind of the Democrat and the Republican going face to face over whether we should have some sort of meek worker protections in our trade agreements. We're going to be bringing people on who defy these kind of the conventional wisdom that we hear all the time in Washington, D.C., and we're bringing it right to the nation's capital. We'll see how it goes.
Outstanding. We'll make sure we get some links up at our website so folks can tune in. This Sunday it starts?
A week from this Sunday.
A week from this Sunday.
February 5th.
All right. We look forward to it. Joshua, always great talking with you. I appreciate your time.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, Rich.
Joshua Holland, senior writer and editor over at alternet.org. Quick break, right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Your thoughts after this.
Don't know much biology. Don't know much about the science book. Don't know much about the French I took. But I do know that I need you. And if you fall for all the crap I spew, what a wonderful world this would be.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Thanks for listening to The Rick Smith Show. We are currently moving to a new, better studio that will allow us to bring new features to the show. We'll be back next week with fresh content talking about the attacks on workers today. In the meantime, enjoy some of our best programming from last year's attacks. To keep updated with what's happening in Harrisburg and around the globe, be sure to like our Facebook page at facebook.com/Rick Smith Show. Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at thericksmithshow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can, and we will, rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Radio of, for, and by we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
All right, everybody, you got to dig a little deep into the pockets. We're going to pass the collection plate right now. You know, times are tough. Understand. Chevron Corporation, they announced today that they lost money in the fourth quarter. That's right. They lost about $200 million from the profit that they lost, that they made last year. They only, fourth quarter profits in 2011 were only $5.1 billion. They had had $5.3 billion a year before. So in Wall Street talk, you know, Wall Street talk, on the street, as we bigwigs like to say, Chevron lost $200 million. And I think we, the taxpayers, we, the folks who, you know, who need Chevron, we need to make up the difference. After all, times are tough. We need to chip in, share, sacrifice, all that stuff. Yeah, they made $5.1 billion with a B, in the fourth quarter. So anyway, their profits, 26.9 That's about $3 million for every hour, or $51,000 per minute. So they made in 1 minute what I made all of last year. They have spent more than $9 million lobbying Congress, still far behind ConocoPhillips, who spent $16 million, but not too shabby. They spent half a million dollars contributing to Republican candidates. Very nice. That doesn't take into account any of the undisclosed stuff. You know, to the Chamber of Commerce, the American Petro Institute, you know, those front groups, none of that. But, you know, they need our money. They need our help. And in fact, they've only got $13 billion of cash on hand. And you stop and you think about it. The five oil companies, collectively, they have cash reserves of almost $60 billion. So they're sitting on $60 billion worth of cash. Now, remember what they told us? Remember they said, well, if they, you know, if we give them the money, they're going to create jobs. Remember that? Remember we talked about ConocoPhillips yesterday because they made $12.4 billion for 2011 and, well, 88% of it went to buy back their company stock. Well, Chevron, no different. They spent 16% of their big earnings to buy back shares of their stock for the fourth quarter. So good, you know, very happy. They're wealthy. They're happy. They're good. But still, a $200 million loss of their accounting. Now, understand, $5.1 billion isn't a loss to you and me, but to them, the way they do their books, they lost some money. Maybe they get it from the Rick Perry campaign. Did you see these numbers? His travel costs, $800,000 for the security detail. You know who's going to pick that up? Taxpayers. Now, wonderful. And good for those folks down in Texas for having someone like him. He, $800,000 in just one trip from South Carolina to Iowa and then back to South Carolina. $45,000, $10,000, and almost $11,000 in hotels, $7,500 in just food for his security detail. That's it. They also said that for six trips, in-state trips, this is above and beyond that. The security detail totaled almost another $800,000. So, hey, you know, this is great. It's good for the economy, I think. So Obama's going to be getting beat up, but get ready for it. It's going to come fast. It's come furious. He said something kind of dumb, I think. He said that he makes a mistake every hour. He was being interviewed, and he goes, well, you know, I second-guess myself all the time. ABC was interviewing. He said, yeah, I make mistakes. You know, every hour, every day, make mistakes. And he said, you know, there are always things that you're learning on the job, and I have no doubt that I'm a better president now than the day I took office just because of more experience. So you know the righties are going to go nuts. You know the righties are going to lose their minds. See, he was inexperienced. He doesn't know anything. And he makes mistakes like Solyndra. That's why we need to cut off all alternative energy funding, according to them. And understand, there's another one coming. This NR1, who a subsidiary of NR1, got some grant money from the Department of Energy. As I understand it, the main company is in trouble. This Enerdell is the company that got the money. They got $118.5 million grant. This Enerdell, their job is to make batteries, you know, because we need batteries for electric vehicles. So it was, you know, kind of to help get that off of the ground. Now, this Ener1 company, evidently in a little bit of trouble, going to go through bankruptcy, I guess. They filed for it. So all we're going to hear now is how, Obama's another failed company. Enerdell, from what I'm reading, looks like they're in pretty good shape. They're actually doing what they're supposed to be doing. They created 1,700 jobs. But, you know, company's in trouble. The big company, I guess, is in trouble. Major financial problems. So it'll be interesting to see how the Republicans try and spin this. And again, I go back to this idea that, you know, and Newt kind of hit on it. And I'm hoping that, you know, hoping we focus on this a little bit. As crazy as the idea of having a station on the moon and you know, Newt going to Uranus, that the idea that we had this space race and that Kennedy said, yes, by the end of the decade, we're going to the moon. We're going to do it. We don't, and Newt laid it out. We don't have any of the ability to do it. We had nothing. So where did all that stuff come from? Where did all the ability, where did all of the resource, where did all of the minds, where did it all come from? Did it just appear? Or was it a national priority to where we said, you know what, we're going to educate people and we're going to pay for it. We're going to help companies start to develop things and we're going to fund it. We're going to get smart people work on smart projects in universities and colleges across this country, and we're going to give them grant money and funding so that they can do this stuff. You know, if that's what Newt was talking about, I would say, you know, not a bad idea. Because a lot of stuff came out of the space program. A lot of stuff. Tang, for instance. And I love Tang. Loved it when I was a kid. That's a joke. But a lot of stuff came out of it. A lot of polymers, a lot of things that we use in everyday products, all kind of compounds. The list is virtually impossible to name off. But it was because we funded, we invested. Now, the righties might want to tell you, well, you know, it was private energy ingenuity and it was private corporate. No. This was government. And I find it pretty remarkable that he would use that as his, hey, look at this thing. Because it's government in action. It's smart policy. It's good investment. It's good government. Worked well. We did it. And early. So when I look at the alternative energy stuff, you're going to have a couple of setbacks. You're going to have a Solyndra. You're going to have an Ener-1. You're going to have some companies that are going to struggle because the technology is developing and it's getting better and the competition is there. And don't forget, we're being beaten up by marauders. We're competing against mercantilists, and we're allowing it to happen. The Chinese are heavily subsidizing alternative energy. We're just giving grants and some loan guarantees. They're fully funding it because they understand the people, the nation that is energy independent, the nation that doesn't have to worry about fossil fuels, the nation that can turn the light switch on and not worry, am I funding someone who hates me? They're going to be the leader in the 21st century and beyond. Where I agree with Newt, we're thinking tip of the nose, especially when it comes to energy. We're thinking 50-year technology. Oh, well, we got to drill for fuel, and then we got to burn it, and give huge money to energy companies so they can sit on nearly $60 billion that they were told when they have, maybe if they have $61 billion. They'll create more jobs. What do you think? If we give them more tax breaks, we all chip in, we get them over that hump, do you think then they'll hire? What's the magic number to where you say, I'm sitting on this pile of cash, I should hire somebody? Is there a magic number? Get Romney on that. Because understand, the only reason people hire is because there's demand. And I give Obama credit for not backing down on clean energy. I give him credit for coming out and saying, we're going to boost our clean energy efforts. I give him credit for that. Let's take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Radio of, for, and by, we the working people. The Rick Smith Show. It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Thanks for listening to the Rick Smith Show. We are currently moving to a new, better studio that will allow us to bring new features to the show. We'll be back next week with fresh content talking about the attacks on workers today. In the meantime, enjoy some of our best programming from last year's attacks. To keep updated with what's happening in Harrisburg and around the globe, be sure to like our Facebook page at facebook.com/Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. More than 1,000 Las Vegas taxi drivers are entering their fourth week on strike.
against the Yellow Checker Star cab company after the company imposed a labor contract rejected by 70% of the drivers. Compensation and hours worked are major issues. Sam Moffitt is a chief union steward with the Taxi Drivers Union, ITPEU, Local 4873. He says compensation is the same now as it was in 2008, 39% of the meter plus tips. Drivers often have to work 12-hour shifts and pay $55 a week, plus about $3.60 a day deducted from their fares for health care. Moffitt says that many of these striking Las Vegas drivers are immigrants chasing the American dream. But while the strike is on, they're urging Vegas tourists to not take Yellow Checker Star cabs.
People that came over here with the great American dream, as what our fathers and our forefathers did the same thing. And all we expect, all the cab drivers want, is a fair contract. We're not asking for the world. We don't expect the world. But we expect to be treated fairly and be treated as humans. And not only Yellow Checker Star, but every cab company in Las Vegas is guilty of the same thing. And this needs to be resolved. It needs to be changed.
The forced federal furloughs brought on by the sequester cuts will significantly impact younger workers and their families. Jesse Russell reports.
Last week, rallies calling on Congress to fix the sequester cuts were held throughout the country. Howard Eagerman is a Social Security worker, and he's also American Federation of Government Employees Local 3172 Vice President. He attended a rally in East Oakland, California. He said one of the primary concerns is how unpaid furloughs will impact new hires.
The people who may be first to go are the newest employees, the temporary hires, who are primarily disabled individuals, Peace Corps volunteers, and what concerns me most, veterans, because I started as a veteran 40 years ago.
Eagerman said the 20% pay cut that will result from the furloughs will overwhelmingly hinder younger workers from being able to pay their bills and get ahead.
I have worries about our younger people not being able to pay the rent, not being able to pay the car note. And, for instance, one of my colleagues has something like $100,000 in college loans. I'm concerned about the young folks. That is my major concern.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
Workers Independent News made possible in part through underwriting support from the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Don't really care about the economy. Don't care much about democracy. I'm a member of the GOP, trying to form a plutocracy. But if I can just bamboozle you, and you'll share my narrow point of view, what a wonderful world this would be.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. So the controversy. We are nearing the 275th birthday of Thomas Paine. The controversy is that January 29th, 1737, or February 9th, 1737. Here to answer that question and talk about the life of Thomas Paine is our good friend Harvey Kay. He's also the expert on Thomas Paine, having written the book Thomas Paine and the Promise of America. Harvey, thanks for taking time for me.
Hello, Rick.
So the controversy. January 29th or February 9th or another day?
Well, look, I mean, it's January 29th. We live in the real world, right? And the February date is basically just refers to the change from the old calendar to the new back in the 18th century or whatever. And nobody celebrates the February date other than some truly reactionary, you know, conservatives. And believe me, that's the case. Okay.
And those would be the people who would want his birth certificate, his long form live birth
certificate.
Oh,
absolutely. I mean, it's bizarre because the very people who would want to make it in February are basically the people who, for 200 years in this country, have done everything they can to suppress his memory.
Why is he taking on such prominence right now? I hear a lot of people talking about his books, especially Common Sense and the Rights of Man. Not so much the Age of Reason.
Yeah. I think this is the thing to consider. I mean, first of all, in spite of the fact he doesn't have a monument on the National Mall in Washington, D.C., Thomas Paine is the original and great radical founder of the United States with his vision of an independent and democratic nation. And the thing is that ever since those years of the revolutionary struggle, which were sort of incited by Common Sense and then the Crisis Papers, Americans in every generation have rediscovered pain in order to make their own age perhaps once again radical. So, you know, from the abolitionists and the Working Men's Party and the free thinkers and then the suffragists all the way through to the 20th century of labor organizers and socialists and anti-war organizers, I can just go on. It's always been people on the left, you know, progressives, radicals, and liberals. But here's what happened. In the late 70s, Ronald Reagan started to quote Thomas Paine. And he quoted him and shocked conservatives when he did that. And the line he quoted was, "We have it in our power to begin the world over again." So what happened is Republican conservatives started to wonder, well, God, if our hero is quoting Thomas Paine, maybe we should rediscover him. But the problem is that they can only handle one little part of his writings at the very, very beginning of Common Sense, where he talks about the evils of government, and he had in mind the British government. Everything else is Thomas Paine arguing for democracy in America, for social democracy. He's the guy who envisioned, by way of Rights of Man, Social Security. He envisioned a whole series of initiatives to make America and other Western nations all the freer, all the more equal, all the more democratic. So what's happened is, for these 200 and something years, it's been sort of popular progressive movements that have laid claim to Paine, but the conservatives have made every effort to block it. Now, liberals don't know what to make of Paine. Conservatives try to exploit the little bit of him. Now, I happen to be down in Sarasota, Florida right now to celebrate Paine's birthday with the Florida Veterans for Common Sense, a group of 75 veterans from World War II to Afghanistan and Iraq who realized that the greatness of America traces back to the American Revolution and that the greatest of those revolutionaries was Paine. Now, it also happens to be the case that Tea Party types have also tried to lay claim to Paine. But have you noticed none of the candidates, not Romney, not Gingrich, clearly not Santorum, go anywhere near Thomas Paine. Why? Because Paine absolutely believed in separation of church and state. And these Republican, you know, GOP folks, you know, they want to saturate government with religious rhetoric.
Yeah, I mean, I got to be honest. I was surprised when the Tea Party people were talking about it. And, you know, the Age of Reason basically got him ostracized, if I remember my history right.
Right. Now, keep in mind, the Christian conservatives won't have anything to do with Thomas Paine. But the Tea Party folks are not, I mean, they overlap, but they're really not Christian conservatives. Those are the folks who, I mean, they're terribly confused, undeniably, but those are the folks who want to sort of challenge national government. They don't want a stronger national government to pursue the kinds of civil rights, labor rights, and other initiatives that are so effective when pursued at that level. They'd rather deal with state government. So we see in Indiana the effort to roll back private sector workers' rights. In Wisconsin, the campaigns, and you know, I'm from Wisconsin, to push back public employees' rights to organize.
Right.
I mean, there's a real, to use the word, there's a real class war from above going on, and the Tea Party folk confuse the whole issues because these are folks who have a real streak of a kind of libertarian democratic spirit, and how they're lining up with the likes of Romney, well, not so much with Romney, but even Gingrich is just amazing. And we only have a short time, and I didn't mean to confuse the issue, but it is the case that Paine represents the greatest of the democratic spirit of America.
Yeah,
and even to this day, folks like these Florida Veterans for Common Sense, out in California, there are two groups that get together. I mean, all over the country, this weekend, either tomorrow night or Sunday, there will be parties in Paine's memory.
And that's a good thing. But, you know, you bring up that the conservatives want to take him over. It's not surprising to me because I just saw a Heritage Foundation blog post saying that Bruce Springsteen is a conservative.
Sorry, I'm laughing my head off on that one.
Yeah, but, you know,
especially because I grew up in New Jersey and I think I have a sense of what Springsteen is about.
But they went into one of his songs, the one that we're all in this together, and they found a couple of words. They clipped those couple of words out and go, "See, here it is."
Oh, well, yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, in fact, we are all in this together, and the problem is there are those of us who are trying to take advantage of the rest of us who are all in it together.
Yeah,
right? I mean, that's what we're really talking about in this age of class war from above.
You know, one of my favorite quotes, or one that I remember the most from Thomas Paine, is one that said, "Belief in a cruel God makes a cruel man."
Yeah, now it's interesting to keep in mind that Paine did believe in God.
Well, of course, I'm sure he did. But
he did, but his idea was that if you really want to celebrate God and you want to worship God, then celebrate the creation. He believed that one studies science, and one appreciates God's gift to humanity.
No, the reason I bring that up is because I see so much of the right wing of the country, very, very angry. Their God is a very angry, cruel God. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps. You're on your own. And hooray for me and the heck with you. That's the because I believe in God too, just not this angry, vindictive, punishing God.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about all the questions that come up when Thomas Paine enters the room, right? From religion to workers' rights. And let's not forget Paine's very first career that he was, from which he got, the reason he got fired from his career in England was that he was organizing workers and representing them to Parliament.
So what would you say today, where would he fall in today's political world?
He would fall, should not be surprised to know that I believe, I mean, I don't think it would be surprising to see Paine writing pamphlets encouraging more and more Americans to occupy.
Yeah, that's where I was going.
I don't think there's any question. But I also believe that he would never leave it at that. He would firmly support the organization of labor. That to me is undeniably essential to any of this. You know, Occupy needs to go beyond Occupy.
I absolutely agree with you. And bringing this back to your home state of Wisconsin, you know, the things that are going on now, the recall, you know, I think part of Paine may be alive. What do you?
I think it's
not sure how to.
You know what?
It's
a year ago now, and I remember it was Super Bowl weekend, and the Packers win. And of course, don't forget the Packers are essentially a community-owned team.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, reality hit because once he had a chance to get his hands on government, Scott Walker turned around, and with his Republican legislative buddies, they basically tear away from workers, public employees, their rights to organize and collectively bargain. And it was like all of a sudden, overnight, we went from brightness to darkness. But instead of giving up, and with all of this talk in the last few years, where are Americans? Why aren't they angry? You know, and the Tea Party had occupied the public spaces. 100,000-plus Wisconsinites poured into Madison, and weekend upon weekend marched around, drummed the beat and sang, "This is what democracy looks like." That was actually one of the high points. That was like one of the greatest moments that I can remember of democratic life in America.
Well, I got to be honest. You know, we went out there. We spent 9 days in the Capitol there. And the reason we went, because it was historic.
Yeah, it really was. And for me, the question now is, can we sustain that and find ourselves a candidate so we can retake the governor's mansion?
And not just in Wisconsin, but across this country as we see these right-wing attacks and this no rights at work agenda, something as you've stated, and I've always believed, something I don't think Paine would have tolerated.
No, definitely not. I mean, Paine absolutely believed in human rights, in workers' rights, and he would be shocked at the gross inequalities that have come to prevail in the country that he so believed in.
So he wouldn't have been a Romney voter?
Never Romney? No, not a chance. I'm not sure. I mean, to be honest about it, he'd be torn apart about how to vote. Obviously in the end he'd vote in order to keep, he'd vote like many of us will have to vote. He'll hold his nose and he'll go out and vote to keep them out of office.
Yeah, good point. The book again is Thomas Paine and the Promise of America, written by our friend Harvey J.K. Have a great time down in Sarasota.
Thank you. Thank you. These Florida Veterans for Common Sense are the best guys in the world.
And I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Okay,
for
thanks.
On.
Good talking to you.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Again, you know, you hear a lot of this, and it's just great to talk to somebody who really gets the issue. Quick break right back after this. Stick around.
I'll never bend. I'm with you now until the end.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
Thanks for listening to the Rick Smith Show. We are currently moving to a new, better studio that will allow us to bring new features to the show. We'll be back next week with fresh content talking about the attacks on workers today. In the meantime, enjoy some of our best programming from last year's attacks. To keep updated with what's happening in Harrisburg and around the globe, be sure to like our Facebook page at facebook.com/Rick Smith Show.
When President Obama called for raising America's wage floor to $9 an hour, GOP House Leader John Boehner attacked it like a gator on a poodle. Incredibly, he claimed that raising the wages of our country's most poorly paid workers would hurt, guess who? America's most poorly paid workers. This disingenuous pitting of poor people against themselves is derived from a corporate manufactured myth that hiking the minimum forces small business owners to fire employees or even go bankrupt. When you raise the price of employment, he grumped, guess what happens? You get less of it. Well, guess again, John. That job killer fable has been debunked again and again by real-world experience. The pay floor has constantly been elevated by Congress, states, and cities, causing little to zero negative impacts on job numbers, but very positive results for employee morale, productivity, and turnover. It also generates a spending boost for local economies, especially for, guess who, small businesses. Obviously, the major impact of the raise is to lift the incomes of about 18 million hardworking people in low-wage jobs, allowing them to make a down payment on a used car or enroll in a couple of community college classes. Plus, it gives at least a token nod to the essential need of bridging America's dangerously widening chasm of economic inequality. This is Jim Hightower saying, the real shame in the Republican leader's attack is not his flagrant dishonesty, but the raw disdain it flings at low-wage workers, 60% of whom are women. The Boehners, Romneys, Koch brothers, and Wall Street billionaires see such people only in terms of their price tags, not in their value. That dehumanized contempt for the working class not only stains those who look down on the non-rich, but it's also holding back public policies to help America reach its full economic potential, and it is social dynamite.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
Sanity for a change. The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. If you've missed any portion of the program, you can download the podcast there at the website or get the Stitcher app and take the program on the go. Question, comment, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com, or you can give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Another Payne quote that sticks in my head, I prefer peace, but if trouble must come, let it be in my time so that my children can live in peace. And I think about that on a lot of issues. Whether it's on the job or it's in the environment or whether it's in government or in war. Let it be now because I want a better tomorrow for my children. I want to make sure that they have opportunity. I want to make sure that they have peace. I want to make sure that they have health care. They have retirement security. They have all the things that I want and I think we all want. But let's make their lives easier. And, you know, I'm mentally right there with that sentiment. And I think we all are. If we're going to have to tighten our belts, let's do it now. Let's make sure we get things done. If we have to invest and we have to create things, let's do it now. Let's get it done today. Pretty simple stuff. I look at this story up in Canada, and we interviewed somebody from the Canadian auto workers not too long ago. They want a 55% pay cut, the folks at Caterpillar. They've told their unionized workers, well, you know what? You're going to get a 55% pay cut. Or we're going to move to the U.S. You got to love that. Maybe looking to China, for instance, or who knows where. Now, understand this is a very, very profitable company. Revenues for 2011. Increased 4% to $2.65 billion. They're sitting on a boatload of cash. And they're saying, you know what, you working people? Sorry. We want more money. Those workers in the U.S., well, they make less than you do. So if you don't take this, we're going to kick you to the curb. This is what we're exporting, folks. This is the mentality that we're exporting here in the U.S. This business-friendly, opportunistic pay cutting. And I blame us because we're one of the few nations in the industrialized world who have such pathetic labor laws. We're one of the most disorganized workforces in the entire world. And we've bought into that right-wing line. I can make my own deal. And I've asked this question a bunch of times. You know, tell me what you do. Tell me what you do. Tell me when you walked into the boss on the day you got hired, say, you know what, boss, I'm going to make my own deal. Because most people that I've talked to, when they went and they got their job, the boss said, this is what I'm offering. Take it or leave it. These are the conditions. Take it or leave it. These are the benefit packages. Or maybe none. Take it or leave it. That's the negotiation. And that's the negotiation the Romneys of the world and the Nikki Haley's of the world and the Republican Party, the GOME, that's the kind of negotiation they want to have. They want to have a desperation class of folks like you and me. They want to have people who are in that poverty situation where, hey, I got kids to feed. I got to worry about their tomorrow. Oh, I can't risk losing this job, even though it's not paying me enough to pay my bills or support my family. With a company that's wildly profitable, and you look at all of these big companies, their returns are beautiful. The investor class is wonderful. They're just so happy, and they're paying 15% capital gains, minus whatever expenditures they have. Lunch on the yacht, got to write that off, of course. And then you and I pick up the tab. I don't know if you saw this story. Rand Paul was detained at an airport recently by the TSA. And, boy, it was a big stink. Evidently, they saw something in his leg region, you know, somewhere on the porno scanner. And, well, they wanted to detain him. He got upset. Pulled 9 yards, blah, 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 whatever happened. Long story short, they didn't let him go. He ended up missing his big speech. So Ron Paul, the opportunist, and you got to give him credit, good entrepreneur, went online and, you know, set up a fundraising call, wanted to raise $250,000 to help end the Transportation Security Administration. And the story I saw as of this morning, they came up with about $261,000 to go after the TSA. Now, look. This whole idea that we're going to end the TSA, I've heard this call quite often. And I'm going to stick with my original ideology. My original thought on this, very simple. We end, if you want to do away with the TSA, I've got the perfect plan. You're allowed to carry nothing on. No carry-ons, no laptops, no cell phones. Here's what you could carry anything on that you can put in your pockets while you're flying naked. Because I believe we should just all fly naked. Have, you know, like at the doctor's office, they got the roll of paper. Put that on the back of the seat. Just roll the paper down over the seat and sit your naked behind in the seat. So whatever you can put in your pockets, you can bring with you. Nothing else, though. That would solve our problem, I think. Don't you think? Wouldn't that be the solution? I mean, if we're going to be patting people down and porno scanning them and all that. Look, I'm as upset as anybody about the procedures. I'm not angry at the people doing it. They're following their orders. They're doing their job. As described by us, we've told our government that we are so fearful. We're so fearful of those other people that we want to make sure that nobody gets on the plane with, you know, any liquid more than 3 ounces. So a can of soda, just too dangerous. You might be able to, take the varnish off the armrest. Yeah, I go back to 9/11. And, you know, I grew up in the 70s when you would turn on the evening news and somebody was hijacking a plane to somewhere. And I remember as a kid going, explain to me how it is that they hijack these planes all the time. How is it that someone got into the cockpit? How is that possible?
Lock the door. And there was a call during the 70s, one to harden the cockpit door so that nobody could kick in the door. And I always wondered, why don't you just make the cockpit separate from the common area? Have an actual wall that you can't get through. You know, put a little bathroom in the little downstairs of the cockpit. You know, have it up and down a little bit. Nothing luxurious, but where you can go. Seems simple to me. This way you don't have the problem of someone coming in with a box cutter saying, I'm going to slit your throat with this box cutter if you don't fly the plane. And I look at this and I go, you know, there's the answer. Oh, someone's going to blow up the plane. Well, stop letting people carry things on. So they want to end it. They want to get rid of the TSA. The idea is, oh, we're going to get rid of the whole Transportation Safety Administration. It's all gone. What do you think is going to take its place? Do you just think that if we end the TSA that we're just going to be able to walk onto the plane? Do you think that the airlines are going to put themselves in a position that they can be sued down the road because they didn't keep you safe? Because we're a litigious society. So what you'll see is you'll see privatized TSA. You'll see private companies doing screening. And you will see it go one of two very distinctly different ways. One with very, very lax policies that makes everyone very happy. Oh, no one, you know, I walked right through and I got my four ounce hair shampoo through. And, you know, somebody will come and, you know, and eventually we will have another 9/11 type event, possibly. Or you will see them crack down like never before because, oh, by the way, a private company, good luck going after them because they don't have to let you on the plane. You don't want to go through our pat down? You don't get on the plane. It's private. And this is what a lot of folks don't seem to get. And understand, the airlines understand this. They probably want it because it's a lot of money that they can make off of because, you know, somebody's going to have to pay them. And of course they'll go after the airports for it. Somebody's going to pay. It's going to be you. It's going to be me. We're going to pay for it. Only we won't be able to complain about it. Because when it's private, well, it's private. You don't have to get on the plane. And that's been my position from the beginning. I think it's pretty simple. The easy answer, just fly naked. Very, very, very simple. We don't have any bickering, any complaining, any carrying on. You know what it is. And you know what? We may actually look at each other again. Who knows? And maybe the waitresses or the stewardesses or the stewards will have an easier time of it. And the people who make the paper that go down on the seats, maybe they'll be happy too. It's a win-win-win all the way around. So we don't have to be angry at each other all the time. And I'm being facetious. But you look at this. I mean, the last time I flew, it was take your shoes off, take your belt off, take this off. We went to Liberty Island. I took my daughter to see the Statue of Liberty. I got on the boat. Before I got on the boat, I had to do the whole strip thing. Take your belt off, take your shoes off, take this off, take that off, go through the metal detector. Oh, by the way, there's something we picked up. Oh, hey, oh, this, la, la. We get on the boat. We travel over to Liberty Island from Freedom Park, of course. And I get off the boat, and there are guys with M16s and SWAT uniforms standing on Freedom Island. And then I've immediately got to go through another series of take off your shoes, take off your belt, take off all your metal, put it in this little tin can again. Because we're so paranoid, so afraid. That's what they've done to us. Yeah, I remember when they were debating the Patriot Act, and a woman stood up and said, I don't care. Give me a national ID card. I don't care. I just want to be safe. What we will give up for the illusion of security. Anyway, if you missed any portion of the program, thericksmithshow.com is the best place to get it. And, of course, if you missed anything and you've got a smartphone, get the Stitcher app, and you can take the program on the go. Quick break, right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. We want the world and we want it now.
week. Just right. The Rick Smith Show.
Thanks for listening to The Rick Smith Show. We are currently moving to a new, better studio that will allow us to bring new features to the show. We'll be back next week with fresh content talking about the attacks on workers today. In the meantime, enjoy some of our best programming from last year's attacks. To keep updated with what's happening in Harrisburg and around the globe, be sure to like our Facebook page at facebook.com/Rick Smith Show. Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at thericksmithshow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can, and we will, rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show. What they do.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Now to find out what's going on in Washington, D.C., our good friend Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. Victoria, thanks for taking time for me.
Thank you.
So what's going on the trail?
Excuse me. Well, often Newt Gingrich is rather surprisingly disappointing performance last night. He now says today that, in fact, he was shocked by what he describes as Mitt Romney's totally dishonest replies to a lot of questions. I think it's the most blatantly dishonest performance by a presidential candidate I've ever seen. And when he describes all the moments during the debate when he sort of looked down at his feet and things like that, he says he was so stunned by some of Romney's statements. He says he didn't engage Romney at the time because I wanted to fact check. I wanted to make sure he was as totally dishonest as I thought he was.
So the answers were on his shoes? Is that what he's saying?
Yes, that's right.
To me, he just looked really tired, really worn out. All the moon talk must have just taken it out of him.
I thought he looked tired. That's exactly what I thought. I thought he looked very, very tired, like the speech he'd given earlier in the day had just worn him out. And, he should have saved it for game time.
Yep, should have put on his game face. I got to be honest, though, since we found that money offshore and Romney brought it back, hiring the new debate coach was a brilliant idea because I thought Romney looked fantastic.
He did. And this is Michelle Bachmann's debate coach.
Oh, she could be vice president. Wouldn't that be great? The Michelle Bachmann vice president. I might be able to get my picture taken with Crazy after all.
I think it would be fantastic. Of course, it's going to be Marco Rubio, yes. But it would be fantastic if it was Michelle Bachmann.
So, you know, in looking at Gingrich, I mean, just a couple of days ago, it looked like the sky was the limit for him. Now 9% down in the polls. Bob Dole has come out against him.
Yes.
The campaign seems to be, Rick Santorum's come back to Pennsylvania. It kind of looks like we might be heading towards the end.
Well, it looks like that, but, you know, this guy's been counted out more times than I can't think of an analogy. So he could come back again, but look, it looks like he's going to lose Florida. He is down 9 points, so that's not good. And if he does lose Florida with all those delegates, it really is hard to see how he comes back from this one. And it's all very well for him to come out the day after the debate and say, oh, well, you know, I'm so stunned, it was so dreadful. He needed to do it that night.
Yep.
It's too late.
Yeah, I mean, he needed to hit a home run last night. It wasn't there.
He didn't hit a home run. He hit a lousy run. He didn't hit.
Little dribbler back to the pitcher. The guy who I thought was just, at some point, please, can we just do away with Ron Paul by now? Look, I mean, I get the court jester thing. I get the class clown thing. To me, he's that kid in the class that you just want to smack.
Yeah, I mean, he made some, you know, interesting points, and he was quite funny on a couple of occasions.
If you're an alien, yeah, they were interesting. Maybe we could send him to the moon with the politicians. I mean, that was the best line of the night for him.
That was the best line of the night.
And he should have gone with him. Good. Bye. You too.
Yeah, now, he did make an interesting point when he was saying about his health records that it's only one page. I'm thinking, really? What doctor do you have?
Himself.
Himself, exactly. And then he said, well, we do have age discrimination laws in this country. And I thought to myself, not if you had your way.
Yeah. Were you surprised at the response that the woman who was unemployed got from the three, from the four of them? I mean, because they didn't, none of them answered her question.
No.
All of them just said, well, you could buy something. And I'm like, she doesn't have a job.
I tweeted like mad. I mean, I was so insane in my tweets. Twitter nearly exploded. I kept saying that. She doesn't have a job. She can't buy any of these things. It was just awful what they did to that woman. It was dreadful. They had no solution for her at all.
Yeah, I mean, I think Ron Paul's was the best, though. You know, it's the government. The government's fault.
Yeah, the government's fault. Yeah, nothing to do with the health insurance companies. And there was nobody out on the streets before Medicare and Medicaid in the 60s. Nobody was on the streets.
Wow. Just it was fun to watch while I watched it. It was fun watching Santorum go after Romney over Romney Care. I'm gonna kind of miss. I know there's not another debate for what another month, February
22nd. It's a long, long time.
No, I'm gonna have to go to rehab now. You know, I'm gonna be jonesing for debates.
I know.
Because, I mean, this is just, I don't think it helps our political process at all. I don't think it's good for them. I think they're just beating each other, but it is fun to watch.
It was fun to watch. And, you know, the audience doesn't help the process at all. It doesn't add anything to the process. It turns it into a spectator sport.
Yep.
It doesn't do anything to democracy.
We are moving ever so much closer to American Idol-type elections.
Completely. At least the presidential debates, what audience there is has to stay silent.
Oh, but if Newt's the candidate, he said he won't participate. They have to be able to applaud because nothing says freedom like
applaud. Let him not participate. Let him not participate. Let him not have those Lincoln-Douglas debates. Let him go without.
But it's fun to watch and good for them. My last one on the debate before we move along. Was I the only one who caught up when Newt was asked about the wives? That he only said the three of them would be good. Which one was the fourth? And is Calista not his wife? Is that kind of the, am I getting something, some vibe there?
What he was trying to say was that the three wives other than Calista would all make great, great first ladies, but that Calista would be the best. But the entire press room, by the way, collapsed in laughter because of the way he said it. When he said the three wives would all be great, because of course it sounded like he was talking about his three wives.
Yeah, well, there's that too. But I thought the other three is what he was talking. Maybe he had an eye for them. You know, he was talking about the moon. He was talking about the moon. He was talking about Venus. Maybe he had her Uranus on it. Who knows? I don't know.
Well, you know, I'm not even going there, but you know. That as part of the bill that he introduced for statehood and everything else like that for the moon, part of his plan was for a Mars colony and to go to Venus.
Nice. Yep. Beautiful. And never mind. I've got to be good. I'm not going to get myself into trouble. Let's move on. What's the president doing today? I guess he gave a big education speech.
He did at the University of Michigan, gave an education speech. Very briefly, basically, he explained how his new college affordability proposal would shift federal funding away from colleges and universities that fail to keep tuition costs from rising. The idea is that if colleges fail to keep net tuition down and they would shuffle them towards those that keep tuition affordable, provide good value, and serve a relatively high number of low-income students. There's a whole load of working parts to it, but the idea is... they feel it's time to do that and to also address student debt.
Yeah, it would be nice if the federal government funded education like we did in the past, and state government would do it as well. And in Michigan, it's interesting he did the speech there. In Michigan, the Democrats, who this bill doesn't stand a snowball's chance of passing, part of their education initiative is anyone who lives in Michigan, goes through Michigan schools from kindergarten through high school, if they get into any state university or state community college or anything there, fully paid for.
Wow.
And I think that across the country, Democrats should be introducing that kind of working class friendly legislation, because that's how you get into the Romney world. That's how you move up into the middle class and beyond, by having a good education and not being saddled with hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt until the day you die. So good. I'm glad to hear it. Fourth quarter numbers in. What's going on?
Fourth quarter numbers were good. GDP is 2.8%, not quite the 3% everybody would like to see, because that really makes a crack into the unemployment numbers, but it was good. Of course, those on the right are saying, oh, well, the entire year was 1.7%, so it was bad. Well, yeah, the entire year was 1.7%, but the fourth quarter was 2.8%, and it was a big increase. And the people who are watching it are saying, this is an indicator, along with the drop from 8.7% to 8.5% unemployment last month, several other indicators they've seen, that they seem to think that the economy is slowly improving.
Yeah, and I saw something just a bit ago, that the guy who was McCain's chief economic advisor, this Doug Eakins, I guess his
Douglas,
name
was. What's it?
Holtz Eakin or something?
Yes, Holtz Eakin, yes.
Who was against the stimulus package, has come out and said, you know, the president, you got to give him credit for it, because we're trending in that direction. He actually thinks next year we're going to see between 3 and 3.5% growth, and then, you know, picking up after that because of the Recovery Act. And like I said from the beginning, had we a larger Recovery Act, chunkier, much bigger shock, I think we'd be further along. And had we not a recalcitrant Republican Party, I think we would have been further along. Just my thoughts.
Well, you know.
Just my thoughts, but it's interesting that this guy came out and said, you know what,
it's
the stimulus.
It's very interesting. Very interesting indeed.
And finally, Biden at the House Democrats retreat.
Yes, as you know, the Republicans had their retreat last year. Democrats had their retreat this year. Well, Biden went to rally the troops, and he did. He got a standing ovation.
Yay!
And he basically said that come January the 20th, he and Barack would be, and he called him that too, would be standing there.
Nice. Good. You know, hey, you got to do that every once in a while. Sometimes you got to give a shot into the arm to the troops and get them out there working. So good for them. Good. All righty. Victoria, always great to talk with you. I hope you have a great weekend. And thanks for the door thing. Victoria, for anybody who knows, sent me this link with 10 doors you don't want to go through and forgot the Blues Brothers one.
I wasn't my link exactly, but yeah, the Blues Brothers link was great. So glad you sent me that.
Yeah, just that's the scariest thing in the world for me, going to see the Nun with the Stick. Victoria, thanks so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. Have a great weekend. Let's take a quick break. Right back. We'll wrap things up. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
10% of the people own 90% of the wealth. Where do you fit in? Take a look at yourself. 10% of the people own 90% of the wealth.
Where smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
Thanks for listening to The Rick Smith Show. We are currently moving to a new, better studio that will allow us to bring new features to the show. We'll be back next week with fresh content talking about the attacks on workers today. In the meantime, enjoy some of our best programming from last year's attacks. To keep updated with what's happening in Harrisburg and around the globe, be sure to like our Facebook page at facebook.com/Rick Smith Show. Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at thericksmithshow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can, and we will, rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
We need to fudge the numbers and not tell the truth. For diplomacy to be effective, lies must be credible.
Yeah!
That's
have fuzzy math.
Is deliberate deception.
Deliberate deception.
Same thing happened in 2000.
George Bush lost.
I know that.
So let me just tell you what the facts are.
I love this song. See what his plans in place? No taxes. The wealthy people of the country, the Romneys of the world. You know, just wealth, prosperity for the 1%. Gotta give corporations the people's money. Man, I just love that song because it's true. I mean, you know, whoever pieced it together did a remarkable job because it stands the test of time. It does. It just stands the test of time. Anyway, welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, therickssmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of our program, of course, our podcast is there at the website, and you can download that for free. If you got a smartphone, get the Stitcher app, and you can take the program on the go. You know, times are tough in the economy, and we give our podcast out for free so you can enjoy that wherever you go. Now, you know, the economy's tough, and there's a reason it's tough. We have given away boatloads and boatloads and boatloads of money, mostly to the top 1%. And, you know, I got a list of who ran up what, where, and why. If you remember, when Clinton left office, the national debt was about $5.7 trillion. Now, when Bush left office, it was about, and understand, when Clinton left office, it was $5.7 trillion and trending downward. We were paying back the budget was balanced. We were actually paying back some of the debt. They stopped using a good portion of the Social Security money. They were actually going in the right direction. The ship was righted. Why? Because we raised taxes just a little bit. Had we done it a little bit more, I think the ship would have been righted a lot sooner, but that's a whole other discussion. So when Clinton leaves office, $5.7 trillion and trending downward. So there's Greenspan, if you remember, at the time going, you know, in the very near future, we're going to be completely debt-free. There'll be no national debt. And I don't know what that world looks like. In his mind, you know, without a debt, without owing money, what do you do? Well, of course, you would borrow some more because a lot of the debt is, you know, us with treasury bonds, because we floated bonds to build roads and bridges and stuff like that. So when Bush leaves office, remember, he gave away a whole bunch of money, started a couple of wars, prescription drug bill, a whole bunch of really bad decisions. He leaves Obama with nearly a $12 trillion debt and skyrocketing upward. No matter who was president in 2009, it could have been Bush again, could have been McCain, could have been Caribou Barbie, could have been any of them. There was going to be a deficit of $1.4 trillion. So at the end of 2009, no matter what you're talking about, you're looking at about $13.3 trillion in debt, no matter who's president. So when you look at the numbers now and you look at it through that lens, you realize that we haven't spent all that much money. We've spent a lot, but not as much as the Republicans and the righties are trying to convince us. We're $16 trillion in debt, and Obama did it in 3 years. Nonsense. And we know that. But what our media keeps telling us is that, oh, we just blew that money. Understand, our problems are much deeper than just our debt problem. We have followed a conservative economic ideology taught in these schools, mostly the Chicago school mentality, that low tax rates, no regulation, no worker rights, no environmental regulations, that's the way you grow an economy. You push the folks on the bottom down further. In fact, you just mash them into the ground so that the folks at the top, they do well. Because the folks at the top, those are the ones who are funding these schools. So when you see the Koch brothers give $2 million to Florida State University so that they can have veto power over any economics professor hired at that university, you now know why. Because they want to have a say on how the future economists and future business leaders view the economy. When Clinton left office, there were 17 million manufacturing jobs. We lost 6 million manufacturing jobs during the Bush years. 6 million manufacturing jobs. Those jobs tended to be very good paying jobs. One that a high school graduate with some training could get, support a family, buy a house, save for retirement, take a vacation, send their kids to school, whatever. A little disposable income to take the spouse to the movies or a dinner or whatever to help the rest of the economy. We lost that. We lost that because of insane trade deals. We lost that because of insane taxation problems. And so finally Obama's saying, well, we should probably stop this now. About 3 years too late. Should have done that right from the beginning. You move a company out of this country somewhere else, I don't want to pay for it. You know, it's like my wife telling me, oh, I'm leaving you. And by the way, here's the bill for the moving company. Not happening. But we're the dumb ones in this. And I blame us for this. Because we're the ones who've allowed it to happen. We voted for these people. We put these folks, we put the Bush in a second time. It wasn't, you know, I can almost forgive the nation for him being president the first time. It was a Supreme Court thing. I get that. He lost the vote. Everyone knows that. In fact, what's really kind of odd, and I was just having this conversation the other day, the only scenario in which, and I guess this is how you can justify him being president. And so for all my friends who, you know, say, well, he stole the presidency, I can justify him being president. Because the only scenario in which he won, there is one, is the one that Al Gore asked for. So if he just gave Al Gore what he wanted, Bush would have won. So you could take some solace in that, that the Gore campaign didn't think that one through. But there's the thought. Anyway, got an email during the break. Andy sent me an email saying, Rick, I think John Nichols from The Nation said it best. He said, paraphrasing, the Republican debate is like watching a car crash event. You can pick a favorite, but you're there to watch them crash. And it's true. I mean, you're really there. It's a train wreck, and you know it's going to be a train wreck. But here's my problem with the train wreck. While it's fun to watch these guys go after each other and tear each other apart, each one of them is bad for this country. They're, like Obama said, they're wrong for the country. Their ideology is what got us into this mess. Their view of how we run an economy, their view of how we run a society, their view of how we run our government, what's got us here? And, you know, I recently used the analogy of, you know, I look at those four. You know, if I were a CEO of a company and I'm going to hire my executives and they come to me and say, oh, by the way, you know, I'd like to be paid in a competitor's stock. That's how I view them. I view them as guys going to work for Pepsi wanting to be paid in Coke stock. Because I don't think they believe in our government. And I'll tell you that. They don't believe in it. So why would we have any of them here? They're telling you, we're going to destroy it. We're going to tear it down. And then what's going to happen? Well, you listen to the Paulbots, they're going to tell you you're going to have freedom and liberty and all those nice things that we like to think about without really understanding what the world will then look like. The world will look like the Romneys of the world buying up companies and buying up property and controlling things from above. And the rest of us, with no safety net under our feet, will see our standard of living drop precipitously. We will be falling. So when I see Joe Biden at the Democratic retreat saying, we're going to take back the House, you know, nice rhetoric, hopeful, I'm hoping, not likely from what I've been seeing. Where are the candidates? You got to run good campaigns. You got to invest in candidates. You've got to get people out in the street. You've got to get people excited. It's nice rhetoric. But again, it's one of those things that just you got to work for. Anyway, if you missed any portion of the program, thericksmithshow.com. Today we had Isaiah Poole from the Campaign for America's Future. He was on talking about the State of the Union. And again, you know, he asked the question, why isn't anyone talking about poverty? Why are we seeing nobody using the P word? And the idea is, look, you know, we like to think of ourselves as a middle-class nation, and those are just poor, shiftless people who are too lazy to work. When the reality is, if you look at the numbers and you look at the trends, A lot of the people who are falling into poverty right now are people who used to be in that middle class, who, because corporate America has taken jobs overseas and because our trade policies have screwed us over, they're now falling. And the studies show it is a long, long climb back up to the middle class. And we talked with Chris Calabrese, organizer with the Communication Workers of America Local 1109. They ran an organizing drive out there in Brooklyn, New York. Cablevision now voted, and whoppingly, the workers at Cablevision said, we want representation. Now the hard part, the contract talks begin. So I wish them nothing but the best of luck. Also in the second hour, Joshua Holland, senior writer and editor at Alternet. He is also the host of a new program, Alternet Radio Hour, with Joshua Holland, going to be airing in the D.C. area on WEACT Radio. We're talking about Romney and his free enterprise. He probably wouldn't know free enterprise if it bit him in the behind. And Josh, you know, laid it out. Look, you know, most of the companies that he dealt with lost money. Where they made their money, where Bain Capital made money, were the service fees, were the oversight fees, were the money where they had stolen out of the company by over-leveraging it and taking out the pension funds. Pretty simple. And in the third hour, Harvey Kay was here, with author of the book Thomas Paine and the Promise of America, talking about why the righties are wrong about Thomas Paine. And how he would be a Wall Street guy. He would be an Occupy Wall Street guy. Last story real quick. The UN, evidently the new way to get cocaine into the country. They found 35 pounds of cocaine in a diplomatic mail pouch there at the UN. So good for them. Anyway, have a great weekend. We look forward to being back here on Monday. Again, if you missed any portion of the program, therickSmithShow.com, best place to go to pick up our podcast. If you've got a smartphone, download the Stitcher app, take the program on the go, and, of course, you can always email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. I always answer emails personally. It's the second last week of basketball season. Looking forward to the end, but having a great time. We'll see you back here on Monday. Have a great weekend.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@therickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide of flood beneath the lunar sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous ray. Democracy is coming.
We see the storm out on the horizon. The clouds were dark in the midnight sky. We feel the fire. Every plant and every nation, we cry, we are many.